And good morning. And once again, we are back, and you're listening to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers. I'll bring the men on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning.
And thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Let's start off with a word of prayer. Tim, you want to start us off with a word of prayer this morning?
I would love to. Dear Lord and Heavenly Father, we come before you this morning, and we thank you for another day, Lord. And we just pray that you would, Lord, bless your people. Watch over us as we go about our daily chores and duties, Lord, and give us every good thing that you promised. Lord, we pray that your enemies would be made your footstool. Lord, we also ask that you would just continue to open minds and hearts to your truth and to your way, Lord. We pray that this broadcast would be blessed as it goes out, that it might reach those who need a boost, encourage those who need encouragement, and Lord, just that it might do things that we don't even understand or know, but that it would all be for the benefit of your kingdom. We ask that you just bless your people wherever they are and whatever they're involved in, Lord, in a way that would be beneficial to the light of your kingdom. We just pray this. We pray that you would put the filter on, that we would not talk about things that we shouldn't talk about, Lord, and that we would not give blessings to your enemies, but that we would bless your people. We thank you for it. In Christ's holy and precious name we ask it. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Thanks, Jim. I appreciate that. There's a lot of things to talk about this morning, and hope you men had a good week. It's just hard to believe that, you know, you turn around and here it is Saturday again. Sometimes it's just like, where did this last week go?
Jason, this week I had someone come up to me, and dove season starts the week after Labor Day here in South Texas, and I had someone come up and say, are you ready for dove season? And that hit me like a ton of bricks. I realized we are halfway through August already, and I'm not ready. So
I'm in the same boat. Somebody was talking to me about hunt season, and I'm like, well, that's a, and it's like, no, it's not. It's right around the corner. And I'm like, man, it just doesn't seem like, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's that time of year. Here we are. And it's like, wow. I think time is just definitely going by awful fast. And, you know, it's like the days and the weeks, and it's like, you know, just trying to get everything that you need to done on a day-to-day basis is just hard sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it really very, very many things, very many things on our time and constraints on our time. And it's interesting that we're talking about that, because I just was reading something here the other day about the fact that time is a human construct. You know, God has no beginning and has no end, but the more that we participate in these time constraints, it adds weariness and age to people. You know, people who aren't as connected in agrarian settings and the like to time, they tend to age at a slower rate. Anyways, this guy was pretty much secular that I was reading this article from, but when you apply it within God's framework, you see some, you know, it's like, really? So I thought it was unique. So
interesting.
Yeah, it is very unique. And, I was just like, oh, well, I guess we need to pray that we can just get everything done that we need to and pay attention. I mean, it's like, but it's becoming more and more, you know, it's like you got to use your time wisely and not waste time on things that you don't need to be wasting on. That's what I've been thinking a lot about. It's like, okay, what is trying to just prioritize things? And, well, I guess, yeah. And we'll move on. We'll move on and get to talking about some of the things that are going on in the world. Man, I seen is violence going to break out in Britain here shortly or what?
There's some pretty interesting things going on over there, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just in the mindset of the people. That's what, you know, I mean, basically they see that their country is falling apart. And I mean, would they must have taken the fluoride out of the water or something, because these guys are getting, I mean, they're mad. They're upset. One in five Britons say that they are willing to engage in political violence to stop national decline, was one of the headlines. And it's you start reading into this, and it's like, man, these people are like, okay, they're ready to go to war.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of them talking about the fact, I guess they're setting up groups of, a lot of the men over there are setting up groups to protect people and to, they're doing, what do you want to call it, street patrols and everything else because of all these illegal aliens coming in. What do they call it? Mass migration over there, which is like, what a misnomer. Those who are on the ground know it is something different, but it's more like mass invasion. But yeah, I was impressed with some of the political violence and the numbers on the polls that they were talking about.
If you read into those polls, I think a key word there is the way the poll was written is that 21% are okay with personally engaging in political violence. So this isn't like state-sponsored, like a political party rising up to overthrow another political party. This was the individual saying, no, I'm good with that. I'll take part in that. And that that goes right along with what Jason is saying.
Well, and I think even the word political violence, that was a, you know, that was a news or a pollster newspeak for just take the word political out of there, because political violence to me, or political, a lot of that is just demonstrating or, you know, not behaving. But the fact is they've already been demonstrating and everything else against those people. And we're to the point now where it's becoming a lot more serious. I mean, so.
Yeah, along those lines, if you read into that poll, you know, about 50% of those polled said that it's perfectly acceptable to protest outside of these migrant hotels there in Britain. And a little more than 40%, 44%, said that it's acceptable to riot outside of migrant hotels. I don't know. The word hooligan comes to mind, and hooligan came out of England. You know, they have a long history of hooligans, you know, at their soccer games and all of that. These people, I think that's what we're starting to see is some hooliganism happening there, only it's being directed toward these migrants, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah,
go ahead, Tim.
Well, you know, when you're paying $3 billion a year to house a bunch of people that aren't even in your society and want to destroy your society, it kind of puts a new perspective on things, you know. So it's okay for you to pay, but you don't have anything to say about it. So.
It's funny you said that, because there's a member of parliament in England who this week referred to, you know, you were saying members of the society. She referred to these immigrants, these migrants, whatever you want to call them, and called them medieval men. And she went on, and talked about, here's a quote: "Inconvenient truth to the left is that the culture of men from predominantly Muslim countries like Afghanistan is one that holds a medieval view of women's rights." Now, obviously, she's talking about the women's rights. But if you want to talk about a culture that hasn't evolved, you know, we've talked about it on this show that the median IQ is probably about 70 or 75 for these guys. Medieval is a good term for it, and there's just no integration into society there.
Well, and I thought it was interesting just looking at like the some of the stuff, keywords in some of these articles. We're past the tipping point. And then there was another one that said, we are past the point at which normal politics is able to solve the problem. Almost every plausible way forward from here involves some kind of violence. And it's like, wow, that's telling.
Well, yeah, I think something right now it's being directed toward those migrants, but I don't know if you guys caught the article of these boats.
Yeah.
That they were crossing the channel with, and for folks that are listening, they have these little dinghies, think of them as like little lifeboats, and that are coming in from France across the English Channel that are bringing just hordes of these illegal immigrants into England. Well, it turns out there's a bombshell report that's come out with video evidence and that sort of stuff of the English government is just turning these after these guys offload, the government is rounding up the dinghies, taking them back to France for the next load to jump on and come back across. So I think the reason I bring that up, Jason, is there's a tipping point with these migrants, but sooner than later, I think people are going to start pointing their fingers at number 10 Downing Street in London and start saying, you know, hey, this is your fault. And I really think that's coming. There is a lot of talk of civil war in England. There's a lot of talk of that, a lot of chatter. And I think it's boiling down to this immigrant issue. And I think sooner than later, you're going to see, maybe real political violence of where it's going to be from the people toward the government that has caused this.
Yeah, that's what I see happening too. I mean, I see the same thing, and it's like you've got a government that's trying to destroy their country, or is destroying their country by bringing these migrants in, and the people are just they've had it. I mean, and you look at what it's done to their society. I mean, it's destroying it.
Yeah.
You know, and, well, and we got to think about that. I mean, so, I mean, we talk about it. What are they doing? It's like, I think that it goes back to, you know, what we've been trying to do is knowing who our enemies are and knowing, you know, who our heritage is. And I think that it's, you know, we're again, we've got to be talking about that, you know, unseen third party who seeks to kill Jacob Israel.
Yeah.
That's
well,
my
we
opinion.
Hit this flashpoint where
it's a good opinion,
totally valid. We've hit this flashpoint where people are starting to wake up and go, this is actually a war. I mean, you know,
right.
They're bringing in mercenaries and they're saturating our, you know, politic, our societal body with these mercenary soldiers. And they are perpetrating violence on our society. They're raping our women. They're abusing our financial system. They're, you know, they leave in carnage everywhere they go. And then just like this article we're talking about with the dinghies is then you find out that the existing government is, you know, complicit in it. So, yeah, people are, there's going to be some serious anger coming up out of that deal. I mean, it's beginning to, and the pot's starting to boil.
One of the things that I've kind of this year and continuing through the years is really dedicating myself to be a better patriot here in the United States and reading this stuff about what's going on in England and just really right now what we're talking about with these boats and the government there kind of causing all of this. It made me think of this, you know, when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object convinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such a government and provide new guards for their future security. Is it possible that the English are figuring out what we knew 250 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. Might be some Magna Carta stuff coming out of that, huh?
1215 all over again. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I think that's what it is I think they've it's a long train of abuses that they're just finally sick of, and they're willing to throw those chains off. I don't know. It's interesting. I was thinking, you know, see what you guys think about this. Obviously, we have experienced, you know, 4 or 5 years preceding where we're at now, a tremendous amount of the same stuff that England is experiencing, maybe with different brown men, with different languages and accents, but the same nonetheless. The difference being the United States is so expansive geographically that we all see it. We all know that it's happening. But think about a small island country like England, and the influx they're getting. There's no way they can't see it and that it's not in their face. Comparatively, does that make sense? What I'm saying is, when you look at the size of the country, it's got to be more evident there. I don't know. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
Well, there's no doubt there's a proportionate impact there that is really easier to see. And if you look at, I think the other thing is I believe that we have a much larger freedom of speech thing here, still not without some cost, but, over there, they've muzzled those people in both Australia and the UK to the point that if they even call it out, they're jailed or censored as a result of it in pretty severe ways. I mean, it wasn't too terrible any long ago. I remember reading about Britain saying that if over here in our country we were talking about this stuff, that you could be jailed if you went over there, you know, just because of your political viewpoint or calling a forget political viewpoint. How about calling a spade, you know? It's like,
well, what Jason was saying about the, you know, behind the scenes or hidden hand attack on Jacob Israel. It's funny that you say that, Tim, because the same stuff is happening in Canada. What you're describing, it just came out this week that there's a special representative on combating Islamophobia within the Canadian federal government. And it's a lady named Amira Elga. Maybe I shouldn't say a lady. It's a female named Amira Elga Hawibi. I'm not really sure how to pronounce that. But the gist of this is because of, what you're describing there, Tim, of the, you know, freedom of speech just being erased, that they're attempting to set rules within the Canadian government that it's not Facebook or, you know, the social media provider censoring you. It would just be the government having the ability just to delete your post. If it doesn't conform, you know, they'll just delete it. They're going to have watchdogs from the government of Canada. And Jason, I know, because you talk to Derek regularly, you know about the invasion that's happening up there. And, you know, the same sentiment that's happened in England, that's happened in the United States with the MAGA movement, it's happening in Canada too. So it seems like they're setting up the groundwork to be able to just shut that down as far as, people speaking out.
Yeah, we were talking about it last week a little bit, and I think we touched on it a little bit. But the government advertising $84,000 per person.
Yeah.
I think that was the number. I can't remember exactly, but I believe that's that was the number. $84,000 per person, and it's like you can't make this stuff up, and it doesn't work. It's not going to work.
No.
You can't make those numbers work. And, yeah, and then this, it's like I saw that, and I saw the picture of that Muslim whatever. Yeah, she's not a yeah, a female. I think that's the best way to put it. But yeah, from
that thing she's wearing on her head. When I was a kid, we had curtains that looked just like that.
Yeah. Maybe she didn't get the memo. Those went out of style about 30 years ago.
Yeah, that was back in the 80s. It wasn't she should update herself there.
The other thing that is worth saying is that when you shut off people's right to vent, you know, you create a very high pressure, dangerous situation. I mean, it's kind of like they cut the nose off to spite their face. You see, our ability to you know, when you get annoyed or you get aggravated or you're frustrated, a lot of times you blow some steam off and then that's the end of it. I mean, it's like, well, I got it out of my system for now anyways. But by doing this, it just causes the pressure to build. So it's not
And that was the beauty of the U.S. Constitution is, you know, in the ability to redress grievances in the government actually prevents political violence if allowed to be exercised correctly. But what all governments, it seems like, historically do for a time is the freedom that's enjoyed, the governments that are instituted always set up the mechanism for bondage to be returned to the people. And I think that's what's happening, what we're seeing happening, that people are realizing that they're just bound slaves living within a society. And I hope that they're learning that they can throw off those chains of bondage and be free men. Our people, Jacob Israel, we are free people. That is unique with us, not so much with other folks that inhabit this earth, but it does take a long train of abuses for our people sometimes to throw off that yoke. So maybe that's what's happened.
Very possibly. Well, and if you boil this down, if you boil it down, $84,000 Jason's talking about. We're talking about $3 billion per year here. We're talking about in our country, they get a phone, a credit card, a line of money, and everything else. If you stop paying, they stop playing. And, you know, if you look at that, basically, that's if somebody's paying you to come in and invade a country and create civil unrest and create all these things that are going on, that's an act of warfare. That's mercenaries coming in, because I guarantee if they weren't paid, they wouldn't be here. You know, whether it's the Islamic militant ones or the cartels or whatever, if there wasn't the money involved, that would go a long ways toward us, you know, shutting that down.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah, I agree. And then also, you know, they got all these Muslims and they're trying to destroy that country just as bad. I mean, it's like, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, why? We know the answer, and we shouldn't even be asking the questions. But, you know, do people realize that it's white countries and white nations that all these invaders are going to?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. No one's immigrated to Angola.
No.
Or even other, it's worth saying that there's a lot of Muslim countries out there. I mean, if you look at a map of it,
yeah.
it should actually put a little, it should raise your eyebrows when you look at it. So why is it that if they're feeling political, if they're claiming to be political dissidents, why don't they go to Muslim countries that are not at war or are peaceful?
If you look at it, you have like the United Arab Emirates and Dubai and Saudi Arabia and Qatar and all of these Muslim nations that are incredibly wealthy, that are not struggling. These are I wouldn't really call them first world nations, but they are. I mean, you know, they're technological centers. They certainly are centers of great wealth and prosperity when it comes to work and jobs and that sort of stuff. No one's going there. Wouldn't it make sense to stay in your own region and head to those countries to immigrate, where you speak a similar language, you have a similar religion, you eat similar food, you look the same? It would seem that would make a lot of sense, but
yeah.
That's not happening. That's not happening. Instead, they're getting on boats and anything that smokes and crossing oceans to like what Jason rightfully pointed out, to invade, call it what it is, invade the lands of Jacob Israel. And we've talked about it, but I mean, I'm convinced personally, I mean, I won't speak for you gentlemen, but I do believe it's that hidden hand, and it's being done for one reason, and it's to further dilute the genetic makeup of Jacob Israel and further dilute and attack our culture, the religion of our forefathers. It's being done by the enemy to further confuse an already confused generation of Jacob Israel, if that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. I agree with you 100%. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're still at war with us. They seek to steal, kill, destroy. They want to steal our lands, steal our women, and wipe us out as a people.
Yep. That's exactly where it goes. It's just the next move in it.
And it's eternal. That's an internal fight that just isn't going to it's not like they're going to pull up their tents and say, you guys win. This is what they are made to do. They truly live by the sword, and this is what they're going to do until their destruction.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it's been going on since the garden, just in different forms here and there, slightly. The names and the faces have changed, but the end goal has remained the same.
That's right.
Well, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on up there in Canada, too. This climate lockdown conspiracy theory becomes a reality in three Canadian provinces. And Derek sent me some stuff earlier this week, I seen a video, and it was in Nova Scotia, and a guy got a fine for $28,000 for walking into the woods.
Isn't that something?
I mean, it's like, what kind of, I mean, wow. That's just nuts. And they've locked down so far, I guess they've locked down three different, in three different provinces. They've locked down forests and stuff. And my first question is like, okay, so what are they doing in there? Why do they not want people in there? Is that where they're hiding the Muslims out, or, you know, what's going on there? But...
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know. I mean, it could just be, you know, control. And I know that they've done that a lot of times. And I mean, I've thought for years when they do that, when they go in and, you know, lock down the national forest or this or that, that it's just, you know, it's a control. They don't like people going out there and getting in touch with, you know, nature, being out there doing, you know, manly, masculine kinds of things. They don't want them going camping. They don't want them hiking. They, you know, they want them in front of a television to continue to indoctrinate them. I mean, that's my thoughts. I don't know what exactly it is, but, you know, there's something there. And we know that it's not these, you know, climate change. Well, we got too many hot days and too many cold days, and we got to stay out of the forest. Like, that's going to fix the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think that it also goes back to a type of psychology or spiritual condition. A lot of people who participate in those sort of events tend to be more independent thinkers. You know, you go out into the...
Well, they're survivalists. They're people that, you know, they know how to, you know, take care of themselves. They know how to survive. They're not looking, you know, for somebody to... They're just different. Yeah. No, I get it. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Tim.
They're independent.
No, you hit it. And that's another way that they can, yeah, lock them down. The other thing is I think if you look at our national forest situations all across the land, the amount of resources that they've locked up there financially are huge, and they pan that off on people as being a protection for future generations for wild lands and for areas like that. But the reality of it is it's a natural resource lockdown, whether it's lithium, whether it's you know, mineral resources or lumber resources or whatever. There's some of that plays into that too, I'm sure. I mean, it's like, wow. So,
yeah, Derek just sent me a picture. It says, Canada's nanny state, Nova Scotia, forest lockdowns. Canada's nanny state is out of control. Nova Scotia's forest lockdowns banned hikes and picnics. On August 5th, Nova Scotia Prime Minister Tim Houston announced to provide a province-wide ban on entering the woods until October 15th. Unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah.
Because
because of the danger of someone maybe starting a fire. But, you know, you can start a fire any time of the year all the time. I mean, I know we have times here where fire danger is high, and they say, hey, you know, we got a burning ban in place because of that. They don't throw you off your property or, you know.
I wonder what the Canadian government's plan is for lightning strikes.
Yeah,
how exactly. Are they going to, I mean, I just, if they're that worried, I mean, to me, that just is, you say no fires, right? You just say no campfires, you still go for a hike or whatever, and then have, I guess, some enforcement of that, but I don't know. It's just ridiculous. I think, Jason, you hit the nail on the head on a many fronts there, but one of the ones is just preventing people from having the ability to get into nature for whatever reason, you know, if nothing else, just for their health, you know, to go out and for a walk and that sort of stuff. And I just wanted to pivot because I got a cool quote that I want. It's going along with this, but it really speaks to what you're saying, Jason. And it's from Bobby Kennedy Jr., RFK Jr. This just happened. He was out in the, what is it, the Garden of the Gods in Colorado Springs.
Yep.
And he was hiking. And, of course, he had some press there with him. And he was asked for a quote. And this was his quote. He said, RFK also touched on the spiritual connection between being in nature and resonating with God's creation. Quote, God talks to us through many vectors. We came here because this is the way that God talks to us, to link us to our Creator, to link us to the 20,000 generations of human beings that were here before laptops. And I just thought it was interesting that RFK Jr. was invoking the Creator and talking about the need to get out in nature to link us with the God of creation. I thought that kind of went along with what you were saying, Jason, that maybe that really is what Canada's doing. They see the importance of being in nature and communing with nature's God, and they don't want that for their citizens.
True.
Yeah, I know I've never went to the mountains, and I don't know if I've ever went to the mountains and had a bad day, but, you know, going to the mountains and going hiking or hunting or something like that, it's like you come back and you just feel better. I mean, it's not just the mountains. It's just going to, you know, and seeing God's creation, you know, whether it's, you know, wherever it is, it's something different that you haven't seen before. And just seeing, you know, how magnificent some things are, you know.
Yep. Absolutely. I think for intelligent people, when you're out in nature, when you're out of the cities, when you're out of the skyscrapers, when you're out of suburbia, and you're out, and it doesn't really matter to me. To me, I mountains would be my preference, but, you know, to look at the ocean, to look at a waving field of corn or wheat, all of those things, I think a thinking man looks at that and says, that is intelligent design. None of that is a mistake. And none of that's an accident. And quite frankly, I think they don't want that. I think they want us to be caught up in all of the everyday crap so that we won't look at the clouds in the sky, so that we won't look at the mountains, so that we won't look at the sunrises and think to ourselves, our God is a great God. We serve a great God who has blessed us with such a place.
Yep. Well, and Moses was called up on the mountain to, confer with God, or, you know, there's lots of examples in the Bible of how that worked and everything else. So there's something there for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, moving on, let's go ahead.
We haven't talked about Putin and Trump meeting.
Yeah. Okay.
We probably should.
What do you know about it?
We probably should say something about it. Very little. Tim and I were having a conversation offline that, we know that they met. We know they met Alaska. And Tim, how would you say it? There's been very few, or maybe just some vague details that came out of their meeting.
That was the word I used, vague. The whole thing was really vague. I mean, like, well, we had a meeting and it was productive, but we didn't agree on everything, or there were a few items in there that were sticklers and but it was good. It was good, you know. I tried to dig something up, but it was like, okay. Well, they really kept it mundane, you know. I mean, so
early this morning, I turned on some Russian news. I was streaming some Russian news, a live broadcast, and it's not just American media. The Russian media was also very vague. There were no details that were coming out other than it was a good meeting. There was, you know, it didn't talk about any specifics on productivity or anything like that, but they just said it was a good meeting. But Jason, I do think it's interesting just from the showmanship of it. I know this has caught some headlines. I don't know if y'all got a chance to see it or not, but, you know, Putin gets out of the vehicle and gets on the red carpet to walk over and shake hands with Donald Trump. And in a very synchronized fashion, right as he gets out of his vehicle, a B-2 bomber flew overhead. I think that's some good showmanship there.
Yeah, they went all out on that one. I'll tell you what.
Flex. Yeah, I had a little flex.
A little muscle flex there, yeah. The other thing Tim and I were talking about offline, just as a point of interest, we have these pictures we build in our head and of people and that sort of thing. Well, it was interesting that Trump and Putin got into the presidential limousine together with no interpreters. It was just them two in the vehicle. And as they were driving off of the tarmac there, they were speaking. They were having what looked like a delightful conversation. And it made me remember, I think Putin speaks 4 or 5 languages, and he's very fluent in English. And if we have forgotten, we should remember Vladimir Putin was a director of the KGB in Soviet Russia. He's not a dumb guy. He was a KGB man from way back, and there's no doubt he's very conversive in several languages. But something that's interesting on that, of reading up to it, he rarely, if ever, speaks English in public. He always chooses to speak Russian, but I thought it was interesting that without interpreters, he chose to have a one-on-one conversation with Trump. I think that's significant personally, that there were no interpreters there, that it was a one-on-one conversation. To what end? I don't know.
Yeah, what was said? Probably more than the weather.
Probably so.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could have been that was a real big plane that flew over.
Well, judging from the press releases, they might have had more accomplished in the limousine than they did after they got behind closed doors with everybody. Who knows?
This is true. Yeah. This is true.
Let's move on to some national news. What? Go ahead, Tim.
Oh, go ahead. No, you got it. I was going there. So you bring it on, Jason.
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff. One of the ones that caught my eye was a headline: petitioner asks SCOTUS to overturn its ill-fated Obergefell decision. A Christian petitioner has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to consider a case that could potentially overturn the 2015 ruling on so-called gay marriage. And I guess that's getting a little bit of attention, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've got some legal troubles it goes back to a lady named Davis who ceased issuing any marriage licenses in her position because of she had a religious belief that you couldn't have gay marriage, so she just stopped issuing them all of them because she, you know, she wanted to be fair, the way I understand it. And it's funny that they would make they make all these ways for the homos and everything to do same-sex marriage, but there's no accommodation for her at all as to her position and as to her religious conviction, you know, that that shouldn't be done. So that's kind of what that opinion was about. You don't matter, they do. So, and she was as representative of our thought process or of our beliefs as the others were. So there,
I remember when this happened with her. She was from a very small rural county up in Kentucky, and the world came down on her when this happened. I mean, she made international news, and she very soft-spoken woman, from what I remember, very sincere, and like you said, Tim, went out of her way of saying, you know, I'm just not gonna issue any marriage license. And I believe from memory, they had prepared like pamphlets directing people on where they could go, you know, outside of her office. So there was no, it's not like she was, you know, up on a soapbox talking about homos and faggots going to hell or anything like that. She was just simply saying, I can't do this because of my religious convictions. However, you can go these places. You just can't do it here. And the world came down on her. The media machine came down on her. Money from all over came to just sort of destroy this woman. And it's funny that she's reappearing again now with this potential Supreme Court case, because I just reading into it, I really believe she has strong grounds here of discrimination based on her First Amendment or her religious convictions. And the court has changed. That is the other thing to look at, that this was a 6-3 decision that brought down what we call homosexual marriage. It's an oxymoron, but a homosexual marriage. Well, the three dissenting judges, Alito, Roberts, and Clarence Thomas, they're still on the court. But there's four new conservative judges that are Trump appointees. This has the potential of being overturned very quickly. Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court justice, when this Obergefell decision originally came down, in his dissenting opinion, made it clear what he thought, and that was that this was, you know, bad constitutional law, and this would be overturned. And so I think he made it clear then that this is coming back before the Supreme Court, and it will be fixed then. So I think you see a good chance in this upcoming year, maybe even later in the year, of seeing the homosexual marriage being changed as far as Supreme Court. So my real question to y'all is, what do you think the homos will do? Will they lose their mind?
I'm sure that will happen.
I mean, they've already lost their mind. But, I mean, what do you think will happen? You know, we talk about these people being angry and political violence and all that sort of stuff. Well, I'm sort of poking fun at it, but I think there's a likelihood of seeing some queers in the street. Not that we want to, and that is why they make push bumpers and brush guards on trucks, just saying, if you see queers in the streets. But,
well, at this particular time and at this particular day, would you even notice a few more rainbow-colored flags? I'm sorry, Lord, I know your rainbow's not that, but that's what they use. You know, but would you notice a few more of those? Because it's, you know, it's currently going on. I think it's significant that this lady, Kim Davis was her name, but she was literally jailed, sued, and then held personally liable. So they, yep. You know, I mean, they revoked her qualified immunity. Like, we're talking, you know, at different levels of government. I mean, Schumer, some of these guys, boy, they did bad things, and they're like, well, they can't sue me because I'm, you know, I'm a sitting senator, I'm a sitting congressman. You know, I have immunity. But there was no. there wasn't even a minute's hesitation about holding her personally liable for her office, despite the fact that she was upholding, you know, Christian ideals. And I think that, you know, liberty has to be interpreted biblically by, according to our founding fathers. This is a Christian nation. Doesn't matter whether you like that or not. If that really incenses you and triggers you, well, you're on the wrong station. But, yep. You know, it's one of those things. So this is a Christian nation. It must be interpreted in light of the Bible, and that's the way it is. So,
amen. Amen.
Amen. We got a caller on the line. We're going to go to the phone line. Hello, caller.
Hello, man.
How you doing?
Kevin. Hey, pretty good. We're still running hot weather. Kevin. Good morning. I have some few things commented. I like to talk about nature. Back in 2014, I spent 45 days on the road up in Alaska, and I drove up there.
Wow, that is a drive.
Yeah. I ended up going 14,500 miles.
Wow.
45 days. Yeah. And those memories are just so crystal clear. You've been up there, haven't you, Jason?
Yes, sir. Yep. I used to work up there, worked up there, and I lived on a fishing boat for a long time.
Oh, that'd be a dream for me. did you see this new thing with Bill Gates wanting to release ticks that gives humans a violent allergy to beef?
No, I did not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty ugly.
That sounds like a new disease just waiting to happen.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I mean, that's where this Lyme disease came from. I mean, that was a manufactured, we should actually talk about that sometime, but that was one of those manufactured diseases, too, that was in an experiment that supposedly accidentally got out. But
yeah, that was Plum Island, and it got over to Connecticut.
Yep.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. And the Ukraine thing, I really am thinking positive things. And there's a lot of naysayers. But then you might notice that they had no working lunch. They were planned to spend 3 hours with a working lunch, and they departed. And it's just, I'm not sure. There's a lot of naysayers.
I know. That's where I'm at, too. I just don't know.
Yeah. And I love the cleanup in Washington, D.C. if you look on the internet, you'll see that they've eliminated 75 homeless camps, and they're just taking a bobcat in there and just picking them up, dumping them. And these people are really happy in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah, they're raving about it. And I don't know what else to really comment on, but I'd sure love to see the end of this Ukraine thing. I've been to Belarus a whole lot of times, and my wife speaks Russian, and I love the people. I just it's such a dynamic thing to go there, and that's the last communist country in Eastern Europe, Belarus, under Lukashenko. And I hope this war ends. You can call it a war. None of them are really called wars. It's special military operation. Always a new name.
Yeah, exactly.
Kevin, this is Will. Thank you. I have a question for you.
Please.
On your 14,000-mile trip, what kind of vehicle were you driving?
Okay, this is cool. I bought a Volkswagen diesel Jetta. I got 600 miles to a tank, and I stayed no motels and ate no restaurants. I ate right out of my car.
Wow.
And I ended up, when I came back down, I came back down to Washington and down through that Fraser Pass going into Washington, something else. And I ended up down in Death Valley. We'd been walking on glaciers. I was at my battalion reunion up there. We did a lot of things. Dog sled riding, halibut fishing. glacier walking, just a lot of things, whitewater rafting. And I ended up in Death Valley. It was 130 degrees. A lot of extreme.
One extreme to another, yeah.
Yeah. I spent the day in Death Valley running around. I left the air conditioning off, windows down, 130 degrees. Anyway, it burned a bezel right off my, right off my dash. You know, where you see the radio stations and everything. It burned right off. God bless you, man. I really enjoy this on Saturdays with you guys. I really do.
Well, we're sure glad that you joined us. Thanks for calling, Kevin. Appreciate it. It's always good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye. Always good to hear from Kevin. And it's as easy as that. Yeah. You can call in. If you'd like to call in, the phone number is 970-224-4203. That's 970-224-4203. I'll go back to you, man.
I don't know. I don't know if I drive 14,000 miles a year.
In 45 days.
Yeah.
The 45-day part's really impressive. Yeah, so. And still do all the other stuff. That's a busy trip. So
no kidding. Wow.
Amazing. And those Jetta fuel tanks aren't very big, so that's 600 miles. He was getting good mileage. So that's
no
awesome
kidding
too.
I knew a guy back in the 90s who had a diesel Jetta, and I think top speed of that thing was about 70 miles per hour. But he would always tell people, this was in Atlanta, he would say, I'll race you to Washington, D.C. The first guy who stops for fuel loses.
No kidding.
Yeah, I had one of those diesel Jetta. My brother's got it now. But it was, I got between 55 and 60 miles a gallon. It was kind of like a wind-up car. It didn't go real fast. You could get it going, but it just took a long time to get up to speed, and you hit those hills and stuff, and it slows you down. It's got its purpose, and it's like, for an economic vehicle, they were fantastic, and, talk about they're just great. You could work on them. There was a lot of thought, the German ingenuity that went into that car. And it was, they did a lot of good things when they put together those cars. And I was really impressed with being able to, how much stuff you could actually do on that car. So much of this stuff on this newer stuff. And this wasn't, this was a 2003 or 2004. But how much stuff you could actually get to it, and you're when you're working, that's what I've always got about when you're working on different kinds of vehicles. There's some things, and it's just like, that just makes sense. but anyway,
yeah, amazing, amazing stuff. Well, I'm talking about Trump in Alaska. They had some major flooding going on there too, didn't they? In the national news.
Let's go back to the phone lines real quick, and then we'll pick up there. Hello, caller.
Hey, it's Kevin again. I got to jump off quick, but that Jetta, about the way they rigged the EPA testing on the diesel that killed the vehicle, didn't you? Did you know that?
Yeah, I know they did it. They did it so when they stuck a probe into the exhaust or something like that, it changed something.
Yeah, it ran on a clean, and they recalled them. I bought that car for about $11,000. It was a year old or so. I ended up getting $17,000 for that car when they bought it back.
Well, you did, and you put a bunch of miles on it.
Yeah,
you did.
Good
all the
time. I had about 101,000 miles on that car. But I'll tell you what, that car would haul butt too, and I liked it because that diesel. You know how diesels are? You let it off the pedal, and it stops on its own. Just starts gearing down, and It was just enjoyable. But that cost Volkswagen something like $11 billion to buy them all back.
Yeah, and I drove by a couple of lots where they had been storing those cars, and they got and it's sad, and it just, I mean, it breaks my heart because they are such good cars, but there was thousands of them just fenced in an area. We had one in Southern Colorado, and driving by there, it's like, I mean, I had to take a, you know, it's like, what are all these cars doing? And they're just fenced in and locked up, and there they sit.
And they went, they were so reliable and durable. That was the last diesel made to enter the United States. That's it.
Yep.
According
to some people, they just weren't ecologically sound.
But it's like, okay, if you got something that's getting 60 miles a gallon versus something that's getting, you know, 20 miles a gallon, what do you think's more efficient? What's burning up more of the fuel?
Pollution.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for calling back, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.
Just a quick side note on that. I did see where the EPA came out with a new ruling that they can no longer program these new vehicles to limp or disable them over death issue. So that was
good. They need to be deleting that off. I know that's one of the things, is there's so many of those vehicles that are having so many problems with that going into limping mode as soon as, you know, something happens with that particulate filter or this or that, and then they try to prioritize that software for, you know, every different manufacturer, where you got to go to a dealership to get it to unlock it, and, you know, they hook it up to a computer and punch a couple of buttons, and you're good to go.
That'll be $3,000.
Yeah. That'll be $3,000. That's exactly right. Yeah. So.
We need to reorient.
We have turned into like NPR car talk this morning.
Exactly. Sorry.
Yeah. That's okay.
That's what coffee's about. It's like sitting around having a cup of coffee. Never know where you're going.
Can we be American Pre Radio car talk? I want to be NPR.
I like it. I think I'd rather call it truck talk.
Yeah,
we'll just throw cars in there.
But kind of to jump back on the track over this flooding going on in Juneau, Alaska. You know, they're talking about this glacier flooding there, and they did pretty good with it. They got some stuff up, but, you know, the truth of the matter is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but these floods on that Mendenhall Glacier and on the, I think the river's called Mendenhall too, but they happen every year. I mean, this is a normal course of events for Juneau to have issues with that glacial overflow coming into the lake and down through the river and flooding it. But there's a major ice dam in that outlet on the lake, and I couldn't help but think to myself, they have problems with that over around Omaha and Lincoln on the Platte River over there. They have major flooding. We were working over that way one time, and we could hear all these booms, and it was like, what's going on over there? And it's like, oh, well, they're dynamiting the ice blockages in the river, because if they don't, it floods Lincoln, you know? So they were down there dynamiting. I don't know why that doesn't happen here. I mean, it's like, if you know that this is coming in the year when the spring starts coming, why don't they dynamite these ice jams that are in the rivers to get some flow going so they can mitigate the exposure to, you know, basically a deluge. But anyways, I don't know what that has to do with it. But, yeah, I mean, the flooding's been, according to the article I was reading, the flooding's been a concern since 2011, and it probably before that,
truth be told. But, you know, anyways, that was just my 2 cents worth on those issues over there.
I didn't know that they did that on the rivers out by you. I didn't know that they ever did anything like that. But, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I know a lot of times when they got flooding and that's and they had those, you know, beaver dams and stuff like that, that beavers would go in and start diverting water and everything like that. Yeah, people had to – you had to do what you had to do to protect your property. And that used to be one of the tools of choice was DuPont spinners.
Dynamite.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, well, I don't understand why they wouldn't do some kind of, I mean, isn't that, that's kind of a standard procedure in that kind of situation where it's a recurring issue. So, I would think.
I wonder if that part of the river, because there's so much federal land in Alaska, I wonder if the state is handcuffed there maybe. And the feds just don't allow it through the EPA or something.
That would be my guess. Yeah.
That would be my guess.
And that's
that
what
seems like something, yeah, asinine that the federal government would do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I wouldn't think that it would be, I mean, there could also be an issue there perhaps with avalanche or something like that. But you're talking quite a ways down the river and away from the glacier and all that. So but it does beg the question at any rate. So, it's just, they create the problem and then manufacture the fix for the problem, and it all costs you money.
That's right.
So,
that's right. Speaking of problems and asinine, did y'all catch anything about, I don't like Adam Schiff. There's few people. There's a few people that I can just see a photo of, and it makes me want to strangle somebody.
Yeah.
But Adam Schiff is one of them. And so it sounds like back in 2017, a, quote, personal friend of Adam Schiff went to the FBI, and as a whistleblower, and accused Schiff of leaking information, and this guy calls it unethical, illegal, and treasonous. And this had to do with the whole Trump Russia Gate nonsense of, you know, what turned out to be just a bunch of horse crap, and that Schiff was elbow deep in this horse crap, perpetuating this narrative. And the then FBI did nothing with this information. They just told them that you know, nothing to see here, move on. It should be noted too that this whistleblower was a Democrat intelligence officer or official. So it's not like he was just some Joe Schmo off the street, and the FBI chose to do nothing with this. And I don't know if y'all have seen the coverage of this, but because of this coming to light and the FBI doing nothing back in 2017, the FBI and the Department of Justice has now opened this up as a criminal referral, and Adam Schiff is nowhere to be found. Have y'all seen this? That he is MIA. After all of this has come out. So there are many people who need to be arrested and held for their actions, but I sure hope that Adam Schiff is one of the first. Adam Schiff is a, his name says it all. He's a shifty son of a gun, and he is an enemy to Jacob Israel, and he needs to be brought low as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. At every available opportunity, he has placed himself in a position of against God.
Yes. Yes. And that's the key there, Tim. This isn't because of his stance on Trump or Republicans or any political nonsense. Adam Schiff's just a wicked man. He is just a San Francisco Democrat, and just a wicked guy who is an enemy of our God. and he has been able to advance agendas using our tax dollars that are anti-God, anti-Christ, and I take joy in that he may have to account for some of that publicly.
Reminds me of an old saying my granddad used to have about you could put him and Pelosi in a bag and shake them up, and when you dumped them out, you couldn't tell them apart. You know, I mean,
that's right.
They're both a couple of like head scratchers, but yeah.
Yep. There is a cabal in California of this type of person that goes right to the governor's mansion in Sacramento. You know, you're starting to see a lot of awareness of that. And, you know, you mentioned Pelosi, and one of the things I like to bring up, just because it's one of those things where you're talking about head scratching, fact check us, right? Don't take Will's word for it. I think a lot of people forget that Gavin Newsom is Nancy Pelosi's nephew.
Yeah.
I know.
And like all of this is kind of interwoven and tied together as far as a sphere of power and what the ruling class there in California, and they don't have our interests. That's for doggone sure. It is a bunch of, I'll say it again, just San Francisco trash, as far as I'm concerned, that are running a great state. And that's the thing is, and, you know, I know California is what it is now, but California is a beautiful state. It is a beautiful state with an incredible amount of wealth underground and resources, and full of a lot of good people when you get to certain places. But man, they have sure done a good job of just ruining what should be a paradise here in the United States. And it's because of people like Adam Schiff.
Well, and I'll tell you what, it's been a couple months ago. I was able to make a trip out there to California, and flew into California on a red-eye flight and flew out on a red-eye flight and was only able to spend about 3 days there. But I drove up to Northern California, and it is just absolutely beautiful, and it's gorgeous. And and I've, you know, in years gone by, I had spent quite a bit of time out there. And my buddy Josh, he was on his way. He had a job out there, and he was going to be working out there. And he wanted me to come visit him, and I had some family members that were up there that we wanted to go see. So I flew in, and we jumped in the truck, and we started driving. And it was – I got there. It's like he was – we were talking about – he had never been to California before. And when he was on his way out there – he's like, I just don't know if I want to go to California. I just don't, you know, and talking about it, this and that. I'm like, man, it's great. You're going to like it out there. It's everybody thinks of California as one thing because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about Newsom. We're talking about all the stuff that they're doing down in the cities and stuff. But you could draw a line between Northern California and Southern California, and it's like two different states. It's like two different countries. You get up there, and I was telling him about it, and he thought I was nuts until he got up there. And when he got up there, he went up to some of those towns and mountain towns and stuff out in the country, and he's like, there's no queers out here. These people have American flags. These are patriots. These are cowboys. These are, you know, they're sale barns. There's this, there's that, and it's and there was just a lot of cool stuff to see. I mean, it's not what you think of. And to see the giant redwoods and the sequoias and, you know, the parks and stuff like that that they've got over there is just magnificent. It's going and seeing those trees just, you know, that are hundreds of feet tall are just, it's pretty cool.
You mentioned earlier, Jason, you know, of the series of knowing your enemies and that sort of thing. And I think it's intentional of those people in California have been marginalized, those folks up in, you know, what used to be known as the state of Jefferson, right? All those North Californians that are cowboys and lumberjacks and real Americans, and what's the major population centers in Southern California. You know, you think of Los Angeles and Hollywood and all those places, and we know who rules the hidden hand that rules Hollywood in Southern California. And I think there is a real effort to marginalize those people going up toward Oregon to the point of where they're, I would say they're almost the forgotten Californians. Like, I don't think people, when they think of California, they do not think about people in Humboldt County. You know, that people don't even know where Humboldt County is, much less that it's a part of California. And honestly, you know, goodness, those people in, up there probably want it to be that way. You know, they don't want to be, you know, they don't want to be remembered by the people down in Los Angeles. The problem with it is they have to pay those California taxes and support the goings on down there in Southern California. And there has been a real movement for years to get out of that system, to get out of that Sacramento system, and more power to them. But it just made me think, Jason, as you were describing, it really is just a beautiful place up there. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous piece of country. And I think it's a great example of how the enemy can marginalize the people and burden them with taxes. And that's the thing, is those people benefit from none of the stuff that goes on as far as the taxes that are collected, the welfare programs and all of that sort of stuff. It's just a completely different state that it's almost like they're a captured nation within a nation.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Well, it wasn't so terribly long ago, unless I'm mistaken. Wasn't Northern California trying to, there was some noise about them seceding or going to a different state or,
yep,
or creating,
yeah,
yeah. So
that's happened several times. The latest iteration is the Greater California Project, where, like you said, they are trying to, like, there's a sliver of, you know, of what would be the new California. Anyways, it's an interesting concept, and you see a lot of that going up in that area, though. Jason, you know, you may be able to speak to it more than me, but I know there's parts of eastern Washington and eastern Oregon that desperately want to be a part of Idaho.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they want to get as far away. Get as far away from Seattle and Portland as they can. And I think that's I guess my point I'm trying to make is, when we see these news coverage of about all the hippies and the queers in Portland or Seattle or San Francisco or whatever, we probably should remember there's a ton of good people in the rest of that state, whether it's Oregon or Washington or California or whatever.
And or Colorado, like, or Texas, for that matter.
Yeah, or Texas, for that matter. Yeah, absolutely. So, just because, you know, Houston doesn't rule the state of Texas and Denver doesn't rule the state of Colorado, sometimes it feels that way, but it's not the case. Speaking of Denver, what's up with the Denver Post?
Oh, gee whiz.
My understanding of this is you had some people, some citizen folks, just regular old folks with cell phones. They're taking pictures of you know, these homeless camps and the crime that's occurring on the streets in Denver and putting it on social media. And the Denver Post, which I guess is the major newspaper there in Denver, just decided, well, we're just going to expose these people and tell everybody who they are. That way, you know, it's doxing them, right? They're going to dox these people. That's crazy.
Well, yeah, they did that. They published their names, where they worked, who they were employed by, their voter registration information. And this were people that there's a, I don't know, a Facebook page, Greater Colorado. I can't remember what the name of it is. Do Better Denver or something like that. And they were posting stuff on there, basically, and trying to expose, you know, some of these things. So getting, you know, making people aware. Basically, you know, citizen journalists that wanted to get out there and wanted to do something and were, you know, concerned about stuff. And they had taken pictures and posted pictures, but they also went and did some public request forms, and they found out that, you know, there was $2 million here spent for housing illegals, and, you know, $1 million here and different stuff like that. And, you know, went through the proper channels to get the information and then put it out there. And the Denver Post, and it's you know, the biggest paper in the state of Colorado, it's everywhere, came out and doxed them. I mean, just basically trying to destroy them. And then they're like, when they got under some criticism for it, it's like, well, we didn't do anything wrong. We did, you know, this is legal. And, you know, just because something's legal doesn't mean it's right. And
right.
that's their stance on it. It's like, well, there's no, you know, it's public information. Well, yeah, it is public information, but you know, I mean, it was a smear campaign by the Denver Post to try and, you know, basically destroy these people's lives. I mean, get them to shut up is what it was. I mean, it was blackmail, and, all out attack as far as I'm concerned.
Wow. Now, stop and think about, you know, we were talking about that old Muslim gal up in Canada wearing the curtains on her head and monitoring, you know, the social media posts to delete things that they didn't agree with in the Canadian government. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump from what the Denver Post did to what Canada is doing now. It is a chilling effect on the First Amendment, you know, that, yeah, you can put out whatever you want to, but there's going to be consequences for it. And I don't know where the Denver Post, what I'm getting at is, if I were these people who had been doxxed, you know, what they're saying that this is all public information is true, but that is a chilling effect against a constitutional right of free speech and redressing the grievances against the government. I would sue the presses off of Denver Post for doing that, and I hope they do. I hope that's coming.
Yeah. I mean, if you called up the Denver Post and asked for the home phone number and address of the person who wrote that article, they would say, "Well, we don't give that information out. That wouldn't be safe because of, you know, criminal activity." And so the fact that they did that just because they could doesn't negate the fact that they bear, you know, they bear some degree of responsibility for whatever happens there. And I, someone talked to that Do Better administrator or whatever, and they said the account receives death threats for posting public records about people with criminal records that include kidnapping, battery, and work for terrorist gangs like, I don't know how you say that, Trend or Aragua. So the administrator uses a burner phone, stays anonymous, and takes other preventive measures because of those threats. Well, doesn't that sound like that's kind of smart?
Yeah. I don't know. When I saw that, I thought, well, I just thought, you dirty bastards.
No kidding. Yeah.
Well, for the people who were doxxed, I don't know what the chances are them listening to us are, but there's great resources out there like publicdata.com and Tilo that for like $10, you can probably find the information on the person who wrote that article, and you can go ahead and make that public too.
Turnabout's fair play. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about there's still a bunch of stuff going on down in Texas, your neck of the woods. Will, what's Dems throwing in the towel on the congressional map? What?
The fight is over.
It is, okay.
The fight is over. At Thursday of this week, I think, in the afternoon. So to bring people up to speed, I know it was in national news. Pretty much what happened is there was a redistricting effort here in Texas where they were going to redraw some congressional districts, and this is federal congressional, U.S. congressional districts. It was going to affect, I believe it was 5 or 6 congressional districts that were predominantly Democrat. And, the state Democrat reps lost their minds. They left the state. They took refuge in Illinois, mainly in Illinois, and they were refusing to come back, to the House floor in Austin to vote on this. And so the state of Texas took several measures. One of the things I thought was interesting is the Constitution in the state of Texas says that they have to pay these reps when they're in session. And the rules were they get per diem money and then some sort of a salary. Well, it was all direct deposit, so they just changed the rules and said, no, if you want your money, you have to come to the Capitol and get it. And, you know, they weren't going to pay them not to be in session, in other words. Then there were civil arrest warrants that went out. There was all kinds of stuff. Finally, there were enough Democrats that caved in. They came back. They had a quorum. They voted on this and very, very quickly voted to redistrict these areas in Texas. So Texas, this is the point, I guess, that everybody needs to hear. If y'all have seen this just moron from up in around Dallas-Fort Worth, this black gal named Crockett is her last name, and I'm sure Davey's rolling over at his grave, but her name's Jasmine Crockett, and she's just a racist ghetto moron that has gotten elected up in like the Oak Cliff area of Dallas as the district. Well, her job is going to be gone. It's been redistricted to where it's going to be more of a majority Republican district. There's going to be five or six that get redistricted, which should change the makeup in Washington. And folks are losing their mind. Gavin Newsom, we were talking about him earlier, said, fine, turnabout's fair play. We're going to do the same thing in California. And I kind of shrugged my shoulders and thought, are there Republican districts, you know, really, in California? I mean, there's only a couple of them. We've already talked about that up in Northern California. Is this really going to change? You know, I don't know. So all things being said on this, it occurred to me this week, and I just want to throw this out there and see what y'all think. All of this redistricting, gerrymandering, whatever you want to call it, that's going on like here in Texas and California and Illinois, they're saying they're going to do it now to balance the power and all of this. This is just a cold civil war. I mean, this is just more indication that we are at war with ourselves inside our own country, politically speaking. And, you know, you have these governors fighting each other by using the political process to affect the federal government, you know, that we're essentially choosing sides. We have chosen sides. The stuff that we already know, you're starting to see play out in politics. And it's very reminiscent of the 1840s and 1850s, where you saw states kind of going at war politically with one another of social issues and political issues of the day. We're doing the same thing now. It's history is repeating itself, and I don't know. That was just my take on that. That may have been too much, Jason, but I it's interesting. But when you put it under a microscope and see what's really going on, it really is just a cold civil war politically of what's going on in the United States right now.
Interesting.
Yeah. Wow. There. Well, we've talked about Denver and we've talked about Texas and. And now I think I've seen where Omaha has some issues going on there too, huh? So
yeah, that's right there in your neck of the woods, huh?
Well, yeah, we don't really claim Omaha, but
kind of like we don't claim Boulder.
Exactly, it's the other end of the state. That's where all that. There should be a wall over there or something, but. I read through this business, and it's a human trafficking story about motels and brown lash salons and sex for hire and child trafficking, and it's a major deal. But what came to my mind and was the Franklin cover up. You know, I mean, it was going on way back then, and it hasn't. It kind of fell out of the news cycle, but and that's basically that book is all about that area over there, and also about trafficking, sex ring. I mean, it's if you want to get it and read it, it's a good read, but it's not an easy read. I'm going to put it that way. It's
that is correct. Not,
yeah. So it's enlightening, but it hurts. I mean, so they but we've seen go on.
No, I just before we pivot too much, is the Franklin School still in business? Did the state shut that down?
You know, I don't know.
Because was it a Catholic man? Was it a Catholic associated school?
Well, I think you're talking about Boys Town.
I'm thinking about Boys Town. I'm sorry. Keep going. I'm sorry.
That's okay. And Boys Town played into the Franklin cover up pretty big.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Yeah. So, and I don't know. I think it was, at the very least, if it wasn't reorganized or something, it was shut down. But yeah, it played into that. There were some various newspaper sources that played into that big. I mean, there were. There
and
was a lot
and
of
loan and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge conspiracy. And it was written by a congressman or a senator? I'm running off memory right now, but it's interesting. I don't know. We used to have some of those available, that book, I think. But, anyways, there's a lot of interesting stuff, but the saga continues in this article. I mean, they've made arrests now. They had people within the police department and various businesses there that were protecting this, you know, and everything else. And, you know, they managed to, Bellevue, a lot of it centered around Bellevue, Nebraska. Some of it, you know, there were various agencies that were involved in bringing it down. So it's not like they're all bad. I mean, that's not what I'm trying to say, but, you know, it seems to me that they seized $565,000 in cash and jewelry, which I don't know. Personally, that seems light to me as far as I would have thought there'd have been more involved in that. But there may be at some time here in the future. But, you know, it's just slavery, and it continues. I mean, that's what this is all about, the trafficking these. And it kind of goes back into the Epstein series and a whole bunch of other stuff that goes on. I mean, it's a tangled web.
Something that was interesting to me is, you know, we think about the human trafficking and we hear so much of it, and it's typically the perpetrators there, or at least the face of the perpetrators, are Hispanic and tied to a lot of these crime cartels out of Mexico and Latin America. And it seemed to me that in this instance, the names at least that they were given out, these were probably Pakistani or Indian. That were participating in this. And when you stop and put that into perspective of, you go anywhere in the United States, I don't care where you are, you can be in Vermont or Massachusetts or New Mexico and Arizona, and predominantly your hotel, your interstate hotels and motels are owned and ran by Pakistani and Indians. And when I read this article, I thought, man, what? You know, something I had not really ever considered is, what a better mechanism to run illicit crime and activity across the country than to have a network of interstate lodging all across the width and breadth of the country. As far as human trafficking goes, what better? You don't need safe houses. You don't need stash houses. You just got Motel 6s. Everywhere. I mean, I'm not indicting every motel owner in the country. I'm just saying, what a interesting piece of infrastructure to have in a criminal enterprise than a network of hotels and motels along the interstate that are owned by all the same group of people. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that, but looking into the Omaha thing and you know, that really did hit with me of, man, that would make total sense. If you were trafficking human beings, what a better network of support would there be?
Well, yeah, and people come and go there all the time, and nobody really, even the locals don't pay a lot of attention to it, because it's right. Like,
people come, people go, you know, you don't have any reason to be there. You have a home in the area, you know, or whatever. But, yeah, there was
That's right.
a lot of those things going on there. So it's, and you can bet money that if it's going on there, it's going on in places like Denver or Houston or Chicago or any of these other cities. I mean, that this is just a, probably just the tip of the iceberg as far as how that works. So,
I spent a little time in Bellevue, Nebraska, Tim, and that's how I, when I first came to learn about the Franklin stuff that was happening there, and just really had some people whisper to me, and it was one of those things where, you know, this would have been in the late 90s, and it was almost an unspoken deal where everyone knew about it, but no one would talk about it.
Well, it's embarrassing for starters.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. And, you know, I've always been inquisitive and curious, and I found out a little bit about it, and I was trying to have some conversation with some people at a Western Auto there in Bellevue off the Gordow Square about it, and I was pretty much told it's not real wise to talk about that. Folks don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, there's a lot of that that goes on. So,
well, and a lot of stuff's coming out where that and I'm horrible at pronouncing this, but that Trende Arguana
TDA.
There you go, TDA. They had a bunch of those guys that were busted just recently in Bellevue, Nebraska, also, and they said that was a big place for those the gang.
Yeah.
I've said it here before. I'm going to say it again. I'm sorry, Tim, to cut you off, but there is no doubt places like Houston and Chicago and Los Angeles, you know, they have their what I call face tattoo people. I mean, you're going to see those people, just the criminal street gangs there, but it's expected. But I will tell you that a lot of mid-sized to smaller cities, which I would consider Omaha, of course, Bellevue being that, you know, close to Omaha like that. They have gravitated over the last 5 or 6 years to those areas more than the major population areas because of the lower police presence and the willingness, kind of talking about like the Franklin deal in Bellevue of, I don't know of a better way of saying this. It's not ignorant people, but maybe people that are less likely to challenge. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say there is. It's easier to get into a smaller community where generally there are no problems and people don't want problems. So they're not so vocal.
Mind your own business,
people. That's exactly right, Tim. So, yeah, Jason, yeah. There you see a lot more of, like, the TDA and the MS-13 in these smaller areas all across the country.
Yeah, exactly. And, there's just a lot of stuff that's going on there. We're looking at the clock. We need to move on a little bit. I know, Tim, you've been talking about this AI thing and what's been going on with that. I know there was a couple big stories. I read the one about Grok being banned off of X after talking about the genocide and stuff and basically came out and I think that it was AI that actually wrote the letter and said that that the U.S. and Israel was creating genocide over there. What do you know about this? There's several things. I don't know, but I'll turn it over to you. That's kind of one of the things that you've done more research on it than I have.
Well, chatbot was asking some things, and Grok basically claimed it was suspended. They suspended it off there after it had to use their words, was a profane rant. And they were basically talking about Israel, the IDF, Netanyahu, and some of the others, and it was basically UFing guys have twisted AI to spew lies,
shielding Israel's genocide in Gaza. UN, United Nations documented mass killings, starvation of kids for greater Israel land grabs fueled by $3.8 billion in USA. And they took it offline. They pulled that right offline. So we don't want to talk about that. You know, they took it right offline. Mm-hmm. And basically they said, well, it was just a dumb error. And, you know, and so they've walked it back. But Grok said itself that XAI had adjusted its settings to minimize such incidents and acknowledged that they are constantly fiddling with my settings to keep me from going off the rails on hot topics like this. So I sometimes think that this kind of stuff is just a symbol of the reality and the truth. You know, we look at everything in the world is layers. It's layers of propaganda, layers of perception and different things like that. And, you know, we quite oftentimes say, well, when you boil it all down, that's stripping those layers away to look at what's actually, you know, the base cause and effect is. And I think in this particular case, it stripped it away, but nobody was, at least none of its handlers were very happy about it. So, and the fact that even though the fact that it was programmed as to what should be said or what shouldn't be said, it's just like this brief moment of clarity there. That's like, yeah, if you're paying for people to die and you're promoting that foreign aid, you know, situation, you're part of the problem, you know, back to the don't pay, don't play kind of thing. So, you know, when you're putting your money into it, you're part of it. So that's I think that's an axiom, you know. So there's all kinds of people dying over there, and I'm not talking about who's good and who's bad. I'm not sure between the two of them. Talk about stew, but you know, it's. But the point is that goes on, and it kind of reiterates in the Bible that those are cults of death, you know, whether it's the Muslims or whether it's the Israeli Jews over there, they're death cults. And that's what they profit from that. The more of it there is, the more profit there is. Well, where's the profit come from? From us, you know, and it makes us mm-hmm. unpalatable to our God when we put our money and talents into that kind of stuff. And it's wrong.
Excellent, Tim.
Yeah, very good point.
Excellent.
Well,
they've got speaking about AI, they've got a Wyoming data center that's opening too. That's a little bit about AI, but there's supposedly, I don't have any confirmation, but a massive Wyoming data center, and it's going to be using, they're going to be building their own power plants up there because basically, this data center is going to use five times more power than every occupant in the state of Wyoming. But no one knows who it belongs to or who's using it. So, yeah, that's kind of we were talking about power usage on AI the other day. It's like, wow. So, and I don't know if anybody's ever thought about it, but the word power, you know, we talk about power. Power is another one of those kind of abstract words. It can mean energy. It can mean authority. Five times more power than the state's human occupants. So, I don't know. I just, it's kind of a red flag to me. What are they going to do with all that? Why do they need it? What is so much better about having that than anything else? You know, I mean, so.
It does make you wonder.
Yeah. But, well, what else we got going on?
I know we're getting to the end of the show, and I just wanted to throw this out there. I don't know. I know we're probably going to have a prepper tip of the week, but a lot of times we recommend things to people who listen to us. Well, I have the opposite of that. I'm going to recommend not ever touching something. I had a gentleman a couple of days ago needing some assistance, and I was able to put a G-Force 357 Magnum lever action on the bench. It had ripped apart some of the brass, and piece of the brass casing had gotten stuck in the chamber, and this gentleman needed that casing removed from the chamber. He was also having some issues with the magazine tube not feeding correctly, so I was taking a look at it. And the best that I can come up with is this is a Turkish-made rifle that is a clone of the Rossi 92, which is a clone of the Winchester. So it's like a clone of a clone. And the price point is pretty good on them. But I tore it apart on the bench, and I'm going to tell you, I don't know of a bigger piece of junk maybe that's being manufactured right now and sold in the United States. And I sure hope I don't make anybody mad on this. Like you guys, I hope y'all haven't bought one. I didn't discuss this with you before before I said what I'm saying, but I just looking at it of just the components of it, man, they're cheap made. It's just kind of a hunk of junk. And I was looking at Palmetto State and some of the online retailers, and the price point is great. I mean, it's a nice looking gun. It's not a bad looking gun or anything like that, but don't waste your money. Reading the reviews, they got nothing but problems out of the box, just like what I'm describing. So if you see something come up on an email, this is just Will's recommendation. I'm not speaking for Jason or Tim, but if you see something come through an email where they're, you know, selling these suckers off for $199, take your $200 right, and go buy some silver or something. Don't waste it. Don't waste it on this. That was all.
Well, there's lemons in every crate, right? So, I mean, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my experience with the Turkish-made guns is they do pretty doggone good with their shotguns. And that makes sense. The Turks have been making shotguns for a long time. I don't have a ton of experience with their rifles, but this is the only one that I've torn apart on the bench. And what struck me is just the cheaply made parts. You could just tell they're not quality made parts, and you get what you pay for sometimes.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, and there's even expensive guns that are that way too. I mean, you know, that you'll find out there, it's like, well, this cost a lot and it wasn't much. And then, definitely before you buy, you want to either talk to somebody who's had one or find something out about it. Was it any good? Does it work?
Right. Has anybody ever, and I'm asking the question, and because I never have, but in 1022, Ruger 1022 was probably one of my, you know, all around favorite. Well, it's probably one of the guns that I've shot the most of. I grew up shooting them. I brought my kids up shooting them, and everybody in the family's got one. It's, have you ever heard of anybody that said, oh, I bought a Ruger 1022 and it was just a complete piece of junk?
Never.
No.
I don't know anybody.
I haven't either.
I've had people say I've bought this kind of magazine for a Ruger 1022 and that thing's junk, but that has nothing to do with the rifle.
Right.
The rifles are they're like Singer sewing machines. They just run.
Yes. Yeah. They're fairly accurate, totally reliable, and they're just and really affordable. I mean, compared to some stuff.
Still,
so.
Yeah, still affordable. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, still.
I know Jason and I have talked about it, but I think we both have 1022s that may have never seen a cleaning patch ran through them, and those run just as good as with the day they came out of the box. So they're just really well-made guns.
Yeah, and I've had them, and it's like once in a while you get one if, you know, when you're shooting, you know, bricks and bricks and bricks of ammo through it, and it's like, you know, when you do get a jam, it's like, what happened there? What was that? It's like that. This thing never does that. And you blow it out, hit it with a, you know, a can of cleaner and some gun oil or something like that, and it's back to running just perfect. And yeah, they're fantastic. I think my personal opinion is I think everybody should have a Ruger 10/22.
I would agree with that.
Agreed.
Or maybe two.
Agreed.
Or two.
Yeah. So, you might have a friend.
I've got a friend of mine that every time he sees it, he calls me, and I'm like, yeah, just that's a good price. Just get it. A couple months ago, I was cleaning out my basement and moving some stuff around, and I'm like, I saw these boxes, and I'm like, I figured they were empty boxes, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, oh, forgot about those, but I'm sure glad I got them.
That's one of my sucker moments at gun shows, and I know a couple of private dealers that I'm pretty confident when they see me walk in, they reach under the table and put up a couple 10/22s because they know he's here.
He's coming.
So, yeah. Yeah, I understand.
We'll bait you a little bit. Yeah, we'll get some bait out here on the table. Yeah, I feel that way about
it. And Remington 870s. I'm a sucker for those. You can never have too many.
No, I agree 100%. Amazing firearms. Like you said, I've had some of the magazines, different mags, but I really like the factory mags. Those seem just to function the best in a Ruger. The thing that, and there's stuff that you can do to them, and I've shot bull barreled ones, I've shot regular barrel ones, and it just depends on what you want to do. We shot a lot of prairie dogs with those 10/22s, and they function better as a semi-automatic more than a lot of the lever action or pump action or anything else 22s that are on the market.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, and for new shooters, the mag's amazing because they're very simple to load and unload compared to some tubular fed type 22s where. You know, there's a procedure you have to use to unload the rifle. I mean, that rotary mag is just a sweet little thing. I mean, especially if we're talking about the factory mag, they just work. They're not fussy. They come in, they come out, they hold 10 rounds. I mean, it's hard to beat. So they fit in your pocket nice.
And you know, after Bill Ruger finally left the earth and the family was able to do some things they wanted to do, the BX-25s, if you're looking for an extended mag, you know, the 25 rounders they put out, they're just as good as the 10 rounders. They're flawless.
Yep.
They work perfect.
I mean, 22 people, I've always had somebody who was complaining about 22 the other day, and I'm like, you know, man, when I was shooting, when I was a kid, you know, you're talking $15-$20 for a brick of ammo, and now you're looking at, you know, 30, maybe 30, 35, depending. That's, to me, for what we've had for inflation and the price on everything else that's gone up in this country, that's not too bad. I think that 22 is as cheap as you're going to see it. I got an email the other day from an ammo place, and they had the cases of 5,000 rounds. So it was 10 500-round bricks in there delivered for $300. And to me, that's you put away 5,000 rounds of 22, that's pretty good. If you're not going to shoot it, I mean, and I like it because I can afford to, you know, to take a brick of 22 out and let my children shoot it up. And, you know, it's not breaking the bank. They can go shoot 500 rounds, and that's good practice for them to sit there and load magazines and shoot targets, whether you're shooting pop cans or paper targets or prairie dogs or whatever it is. But it teaches them, they're learning safety, they're learning how it works, they're paying attention to detail. They're becoming better shots, and they're turning into marksmen. And it's to me that's affordable. It's like when you couldn't get 22, I was pretty. It used to be the price of gold, darn near, and. Yeah. I was pretty stingy with the 22 ammo when that was going on. It's like we weren't going to go shoot 500 rounds. We might go shoot 50 rounds, and I had plenty put away. Don't get me wrong, but it was now is the time to buy it because I don't see the prices coming down. People are waiting. They want to get back to $20 a brick, and I don't see it happening.
No, if you wait too long, Jason, it's going to be $45 a brick, and that's what people need to realize is nothing is getting cheaper.
No, it's not. Yeah, I don't know if you guys talked about it already or not, but, you look at the beef prices. I seen last week that prime beef prices went up over $1 a pound. It was like $1.25 a pound, and that was in a week. And... I've talked to several people, and it's like, looking at these beef prices, have you seen the prices of beef? And I'm like, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, hamburger, $9 to $13 a pound, depending on what you're trying to get. Coffee's up, gold's up, silver's up. Commodities are up in price, and I don't see them coming down in the future at all. Do you?
No.
Well, I never not again just like the 22 ammo, not to the numbers that you are thinking about, or that people would like to see it come down to. But that's basically that up and down on there is about a 12-year cycle, 10 to 12 years. So, and we're only at about the 7 year on the swing. So they may come down in 3 or 4 years somewhat, but I don't think it'll ever be back to super low prices. That's my opinion.
When I talked to some... Oh, go ahead.
No, no, I was just going to make real quick. I pulled up the stats on the year-over-year. Feeder cattle is up 42.4%. Live cattle is up 29.54%. Beef, like you're talking about, Jason, with ground beef or whatever, is up 32%. Coffee is up 39%. And the only reason I bring this up is if you look at those percentages of the year over year, gold and silver are both up over 30% for the year over year as well. And like you were talking, Jason, of commodities, it's funny to me that, you look at the devaluation of the U.S. dollar as far as inflation, but gold and silver keeps chugging right along, huh? That it still buys the same amount of beef and the same amount of coffee as it would have a year ago. Just a thought.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. I thought it was very interesting.
I don't know that you can do it with coffee, but about the only option you have to try to combat these this higher driven prices due to a lot of the commodity speculation and everything is to go find yourself a local rancher that you can buy from. That's probably going to be cheaper than grocery store prices. It's still going to be higher than it was, but you can get some cost savings there maybe. So that might be,
and
help your local farmer out. He can get more than he can sell into the combine, and you can get a better price than you get at the grocery store. And the side note is you should get better beef out of the deal too if you're selective.
That's what I was going to say. I talked to somebody the other day, and they said that, they were talking about if Facebook Marketplace there were several groups for local farm ranching, stuff like that. And they had found two different beef producers that USDA inspected, had it packaged in a USDA inspected plant. They had hamburger, and they were selling it for it was right around $10 a pound, and they said that they went to him and said, hey, I'd like to buy 100 pounds, but I don't want to pay $10 a pound, what kind of deal will... And they said that they absolutely, and they gave him a whale of a deal, basically a wholesale price, because they took 100 pounds at a time. And so there's there's those options. I mean, it's you know, and times are tough. It's like you got to save money. Sometimes you got to spend some money to save some money. But it's, yeah. You know, there's options that are out there. And I would much rather you just some of the stuff that you go to that you see in the even the wholesale places, you just look at it and it's like, we shouldn't be eating that. You don't know where it comes from. You don't know what country it comes from. And you don't know what they've pumped into it either. But it's something that you definitely you know, I try to make sure that we get something without antibiotics, or if possible, or, you know, without the growth hormones is the one that I really don't like. And get to know your farmer rancher, like Tim was saying, and save a little bit of money and get a lot better product.
Yeah, you should expect to have to buy a quarter or a half to see some cost savings, which is going to be a higher upfront for you, but over the course of time, it's going to save you a lot more too, you know? So, yeah. And not to mention when you have a quarter or a half or a hole in your freezer, you end up with, and now you've got a little bit put by, you know? So, it's just a case of committing those funds to that, to keep on rolling them over, you know, and so it works. You can do it. You might have to start out with a quarter, go to half, whatever.
Yep. Amen. Well, moving on, want to talk a little bit about Dragon Slayer Newsletter Magazine. If you're not receiving it, then you really should be, and you should shoot me an email, jason@sfaw.org, and I'll get you added to that list. Include your mailing address in there. Or if you just want to receive it in the email, you can send me that as well. But it was hot on the presses until the printer died yesterday. And we ended up having a toner auger failure and had to order a new motor for that. And so it was it came to a screeching halt yesterday. And, sometimes that happens. But I'm excited about this newsletter. I think that it is just, I think it's spot on. I think it's timely. Everything from the beginning to the end. I was just really pleased with the way that it came out. The title of it is Elijah the Tishbite, and it's got some writings in there, some stuff, some blasts from the past, some new stuff. Knowing your heritage is just a fantastic, amazing article that just turned out perfect. You know, it was just like you could definitely tell that the Holy Spirit was working when we were putting that together, because it came together and it came together just great. And I was just, like I said, very pleased with it. And so it is, hopefully, Lord willing, we will be back printing Monday or Tuesday at the latest. Got some parts overnighted on the way to us, and hopefully be able to get that thing repaired and be back to printing again. So do keep that in your prayers. It takes a lot of time, effort, energy to get those newsletters printed and mailed out, and sometimes this stuff happens. And, that's just such is life. And also, we're just going to continue on with the Bible Zoo and the Kingdom. And I'll tell you what, I've got a lot of people that have just contacted me and really enjoyed the messages, those timeless messages from Pastor Peters. And I've been enjoying them myself. I've been really enjoying working on them, and they're just fantastic.
You are listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network with Pastor Peter J. Peters, made possible by the tithes and offerings of the faithful. If you would like to be one of those who help to get needed truths out to others, send